We're celebrating the contribution of women volunteers, DJs, on-air hosts, staff, and board members in making KABU what it is today. Light snacks and drinks will be provided. Everyone is welcome. Again, that's the Women of KABU celebration and open house. It's on Friday, June 29th from 7 to 10 p.m. at KBOO 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Southeast Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Iran Form, U.S. Withdrawal from Nuclear Agreement and Path to War, on Friday, June 29th at 6:30 at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. The Iran Form will feature Jamal Abdi, Executive Director of the National Iran American Council, journalist Reese Ehrlich, and local speakers in a discussion about withdrawing from the Iran nuclear deal. The sponsoring groups are involved in prevention of war and in supporting diplomacy and friendship with the people of Iran. Again, that's the Iran Forum U.S. Withdrawal from the Nuclear Agreement and Path to War on Friday, June 29th at 6:30 at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this is The Recovery Zone, a show focused on healing our world. On this month's show, we'll look at the possibility of a new paradigm shift for humanity based on the science of quantum physics, quantum theory, quantum mechanics. Paul Levy, who lives here in Portland, is a spiritual philosopher, an author, a teacher, and a healer who has written a book called The Quantum Revelation, a synthesis of science and spirituality. And actually, tomorrow he's going to be at the book release at Powell City of Books. That's tomorrow, Thursday, July 28th, 7:30 p.m. Powell's, 1005 Northwest Burnside. So just to let that, think about that as we're listening to him talk, you might want to show up for that. A couple of Paul's earlier books included Dispelling Wetiko, Breaking the Curse of Evil, and The Madness of George W. Bush, A Reflection of Our Collective Psychosis. Paul is also an artist, a self-described wounded healer who has founded the Awaken in the Dream community here in Portland. And he's thoroughly steeped in the work of Carl Jung and also a 30-year Tibetan Buddhist practitioner. And Paul is here in the studio with us right now with a friend of his who drove him here, Neil Levinson. And Paul Levy. And so Neil might pop in now and then and have a comment or two.
Good morning.
Yeah. And Paul, good morning to you.
Hi. Yeah, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
There's this quote, classical physics' shallow conception of humanity is one of the main causes of today's growing economic, ecological, and moral problems, which block the full flowering of our creative potential. Oftentimes, a shift in a single idea can precipitate a transition into a new epoch. Could it be that the most important impending development in science will be ideological in the realm of ideas, rather than technological, involving a profound revisioning of a science's conception of who we are and our place in the universe? What quantum physics has unleashed in the realm of technology is the palest reflection of what it can potentially unleash within the human psyche. And as I was reading this book, that just seemed to me very like basically what the essence of the whole book was saying. And I wanted to just start the show with classical physics, just briefly. How long has it been around, and what are a couple of its basic premises?
Yeah, sure. Well, a very simple way of understanding pre-quantum physics, which is the classical physics, is that they thought that the universe was objective, was separate from us, and they would then observe it, and they conceived that through the act of perceiving the universe, they were just passive and weren't influencing, you know, the world that they were observing. And so there was a separation between the observer and the observed. And that's really the essential piece of a way of describing what classical physics is. And then if I could segue from that into what quantum physics did to that notion, because quantum physics, it basically proved that world that classical physics was studying, it didn't even exist. That there's no such thing as an objective world whatsoever, and that the act of observing this universe actually influenced the very universe that we were observing. So the observed, the act of observation, and the observer were all interconnected parts of one quantum system with no separation. And that's what the book, that's the main idea of the book that I'm explicating throughout the book, because the implications are mind-blowing. The implications, it's actually creating this new epoch in human history. It's already, quantum physics has changed human history, but it's only, you know, it's so beginning, because the main impact it's going to have is on, you know, our psyche. And so that's really, I think, the most important thing to understand is that quantum physics, if you look at classical physics, quantum physics was from the dreaming point of view, where the unconscious, if we get one-sided, the dream will compensate, like if we're overly one-sided in our viewpoint. Quantum physics can be seen as like this vitamin that the universe secreted to compensate the one-sidedness and the mistaken view of classical physics.
And classical physics is way more based on the idea, as you said, that we're separate entities, that we,
right,
things
the whole,
are caused by things.
Yeah, the whole, right, I appreciate that question too, because, yeah, the whole sort of underlying premise of the pre-quantum of classical physics is that there are things, that there are separate things, and we exist as separate selves that interact with these separate things. And quantum physics has just obliterated that notion, has proven empirically, absolutely beyond any shadow of a doubt, that's a mistaken view. And so the thing about quantum physics, it's really pointing at this incredible interconnectedness and interdependence of all of us with each other and with everything, and that there's no separation, and that we don't exist. If we've been imagining that we exist as a separate self, that's a mistaken view, that we're actually interconnected and interdependent with each other and with the whole universe. So it's a holistic point of view.
And so, yeah, so it's totally affected our beliefs about ourselves. One last tiny thing is that it's really promoted a more materialistic, which to me, I was sort of seeing that a materialistic outlook on things, the classical view, which I think as it gets more entrenched, it's led to more greed, more loneliness, and even in a culture that's actually, it seems like it's more suicidal. I mean, it's led to a lot of...
Totally. No, I mean, the scientific materialist point of view, one could say, I mean, it's endemic to our culture, and, you know, it's actually sort of the whether it's a belief or a thought form or a perspective, that's destroying our world. And, you know, so one way of really envisioning quantum physics from the spiritual point of view, they'll talk about, like in Tibetan Buddhism, because I do Tibetan Buddhist practice, and there are these phenomena, these hidden treasures. They're actually called terma. And I'm pointing out in my book, like I have no authorization to say something's, you know, this terma, a hidden treasure, but quantum physics really seems to be of the nature of a hidden spiritual treasure. And what that means, so these spiritual treasures in Buddhism, the great guru, the enlightened energy, would plant in the universe, whether it's in the earth or the sky or water or in our minds, these spiritual treasures that exactly at the right moment in history would all of a sudden show up and actually incarnate themselves, whether it's in a teaching or a particular practice or a sacred object, that was exactly what was needed for that time in history to help the beings to wake up. And I'm pointing out that quantum physics is exactly like what Buddhism describes as these hidden treasures, that it's something that we as a species have literally dreamed up into the world as well as into our minds to help us to awaken. And I was saying, I was on TV the other day and I was saying, yeah, quantum physics is the solution to the world crisis. There's no question about that. And being a non-physicist, I'm able to see that in a way that if I was maybe trained as a physicist, because the typical physicist, they're interested in developing technology, but they might not be so interested in the meaning of quantum physics. And that's what I'm really contemplating, is this thing that fell from the heavens, that's absolutely the most successful scientific theory of all time. It's developing unbelievable technology. And I'm saying that's the low-hanging fruit. That's 0.01% of the gift that quantum physics is giving us. And all the founders were saying, yeah, it actually is going to change our thinking. That the big thing about quantum physics is that, you know, the founding fathers, they were beginning to realize that consciousness was actually insinuating itself into physics, into the physics lab. And it was like this stepchild. They wanted to get rid of it. This wasn't what they signed up for, but there was no getting around it, that somehow via quantum physics, that our consciousness had actually entered physics. And that's for the last century. That's what quantum physicists have been trying to wrap their minds around.
Right. And the thing of it is that it was this split. Well, it hasn't been around that long. Like, I was realizing the split screen experience, which really was like showing consciousness, was like in the mid-60s. And some of these split screen experiences haven't even like that really are getting it more refined are in 2012. I mean, they're still trying to figure this out. And that seemed like a very important thing that you started the book with. And that had something to do with something doesn't actually, like everything is like a kind of a potential, but then it gets solidified when it gets observed. And right. Could you talk about
that for sure,
experiment
totally.
And why that showed that?
Yeah, so you're referencing, it's called the two-slit experiment. And keep in mind, so just to contextualize, quantum physics has really first showed up in the last 100 years.
Yeah,
you know?
So it's
and
really soon. And,
yeah,
and
yeah,
the
it's
stuff
a recent,
is in the last 50 years.
No, it's a recent occurrence. And with the double-slit experiment, in essence, and that's been voted, the most, like, I think, most important or the most beautiful experiment in all of history.
Uh-huh.
That's what it's being called. And that was the experiment where consciousness came into the experiment, where the way that they set up the experiment and the questions they asked and their act of observing the experiment, they realized, oh my God, via the process of us observing, you know, what's happening to these subatomic particles, it's actually influencing the way they manifest. And that was all of a sudden consciousness had intruded itself into the physics lab, and then the physicist had to deal with that. And so the thing is, just to be really clear, when people say, so what's the big deal about quantum physics? How come, you know, I'm saying to people, we should be jumping on top of rooftops screaming. This is the good news. It's impossible to exaggerate the importance of the discovery of quantum physics. And it's showing us, it's proving to us that this is a collective shared dream. And I can go into that. I mean, that's kind of why people were like, oh, how does this have to do with your earlier work with dreaming? And I'm saying, oh, it has everything to do with it. And because, you know, if I can say something right now, so say, you know, just to imagine if we're in a dream, right? And we're holding a particular perspective in a dream. Now, keep in mind, what is a dream? But it's a reflection of the very mind that's dreaming. So if I'm holding a perspective, then here's the dream, which is just a projection of my own mind. It's going to instantaneously shapeshift and reflect back my perspective. And so if I change my perspective in zero time, that change in perspective, the whole dream will shapeshift and reflect back my change in perspective. But then if I'm not awake to that, I'm dreaming, I then have all the evidence in the way that the world, that this dream world is manifesting, to confirm my point of view as being objective. So then I actually conceive of it as being objective, and the more that I conceive of the dream world that I'm in as being objective, well, then the dream world, which is nothing other than a reflection of my mind, just will give me more proof and more evidence to confirm my viewpoint that the dream, this dream world I'm in, is actually objective ad infinitum. It's a self-reinforcing feedback loop. And what's actually happening is that we have this genius for co-creating reality, but it's being turned against us, because then we've imprisoned ourselves into this seemingly objective world, which is problematic. And but our genius for creating reality has been, you know, turned against us in a way that's killing us. Because if you look at what's happening in the global body politic, we're destroying ourselves. And why that is because this incredible genius, this incredible creativity, because quantum physics unlocks the most unbelievable creativity that exists inside of our psyche, because that it's that quantum physics is pointing at, that observation is creative, that the way we observe the universe actually influences the universe. And a simple way of saying that is, yeah, the act of observation is creative, and we are the observers. So we have this incredible, unconscious, invisible, untapped creativity that because we're unconscious of it, it's being used against ourselves destructively, and collectively, we're destroying the biosphere. So with quantum physics, that's what I mean, that it's a spiritual treasure. It's actually revealing to us our own incredible creative powers to help each other to wake up and to change the collective dream that we're having.
There is a way out. Okay, I want to let listeners know I'm speaking with Paul Levy. He's a Portland healer, teacher, and author of the recently published The Quantum Revelation, A Radical Synthesis of Science and Spirituality. Sting called the book mind-blowing. And tomorrow, Thursday, at 7:30 p.m., he'll be at Powell City of Books, 1005 Northwest Burnside in downtown Portland. This is the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. And if you'd like, we'll hold that off just one more 15-minute round here. But then at the second half of the show, please call in with questions. And so basically, you're saying that we have this potential. We are like co-creators and all, but we're sort of projecting kind of there's a kind of a gloom, I guess, to classical physics, and we're projecting a kind of, we're separate, we're split, we're not connected, it's a very sort of dead universe, we're all alone here, mm-hmm. kind of sense of things onto it. But but there is another way that we could project. So could you just talk a little more again about projection, like how that actually works? Like what exactly, and I guess Jung talked about it a lot.
Oh yeah, Jung talks about it, and
mentioned that in your book.
In all of my books, I talk a lot about projection. And first off, I want to say, you know, when you think about, if you're in a dream is the projection of our mind. And how projection works is that if I'm unconscious of a part of myself, well, then it's going to be, you know, I'm going to split off from it. It's going to be projected outside of myself and being like a dream. Like if I'm in a dream, because a very good way of understanding this is always to go back to the dreamlike nature. If I'm in a night dream and if I have an unconscious part and I split it off and it gets projected outside of myself, well, then in the dream will come a figure or a group of people or a collectivity or whatever who will embody that shadow element that I've split off and projected out. They will literally, you know, carry that projection. They will incarnate that shadow. And then, oh, now I have all the evidence that I need that my shadow is outside of myself, because there it is. So all of a sudden, the evil that I've split off from in myself is now manifesting out there. And so now that I have all the evidence that I need, my viewpoint of the evil being outside of myself gets even more fixed and more entrenched. So I even more project. And then, of course, then that will dream up the person carrying my projection to even more embody that. And it's a feedback loop. It's a self-generating feedback loop. And particularly when we are unconscious of like these shadow elements and we project out the shadow, then, you know, that shadow, that evil will, like I've been describing, will manifest outside of ourselves. Then typically what happens is that we try to destroy the evil outside of ourselves. Oh, let's go to war and kill them. They're these evil, you know, whatever people. And that is actually a reflection of the very inner process of shadow projection in the first place, where we split off from our own evil in a way we're wanting to, to annihilate,
get it out, right.
To annihilate and to destroy our own evil. And so that inner process of doing that is actually getting played out via the outside world through the body politic. And that's one of the great insights that, in the quantum physics book I'm talking about, that the inner world of the psyche and the outer world are actually reflections. They're not separate. And that's a way of understanding quantum physics, because quantum physics is saying, oh, in studying the outer world, the microstructure of the outer world, they've discovered consciousness is inextricably part of the equation, that the inner, what's going on inside of our psyche, you can't separate it out from the outside world. And that's a monumental, that's an earth-shaking insight. And that's what I'm trying to unfold in the book.
Right. And that consciousness, this whole idea of what is consciousness then, it's like a lot of, one big part of the book you talked about, that this experiment also showed, that split-screen experiment, that there weren't waves, even. I mean, they're waves or they're particles, but it seemed like underlying that was a kind of, not a wave or a particle, but some kind of sense of potential or probability.
Yeah, that right. I'm glad you brought that up, because one way of really, a very simple way of understanding quantum physics is that the act of observation, remember I was saying, it's actually creative. So before the moment of observation, the elementary particle, which is either a wave and or a particle, it depends how it's observed, it exists in a state of possibility, of probability. It's not definitive yet. It's just, so any possible state it could possibly exist in, from the quantum point of view, that it exists in all of those potentialities in this, in like, this superposition of states. And the moment we observe it, it collapses, the whole, like the function, the wave function of the elementary particle collapses into actualization, into a specific manifestation, and that's what we'll experience in the world. And so that's very, very interesting how, and that's happening each moment. And of course, that points back to the incredible profundity of, oh, how are we observing it? And like you had mentioned, well, what is the nature of, like, here's this light. What is the nature of light? Well, sometimes we'll observe it and it'll manifest as a particle. Sometimes we'll observe it, it'll be a wave. Well, what is it? What is light? Well, And the point is, it's not even like that light intrinsically has a property of a wave or a particle. It's like, no, it will manifest as either a wave or a particle as it interfaces with our consciousness. So that's the really important point, that how this world manifests, whether we're talking about light or the whole world, it depends how do we dream it. We are co-dreaming this dream. We're collectively having a mass shared dream. We're unconscious of that. So then we dream up this universe in the way that we're doing, where we're destroying ourselves. But what I'm pointing out is that quantum physics is the very treasure. It's the revelation. That's why it's called the quantum revelation, the book. It's the revelation that's helping us to wake up. And it's like, it should be front page news on every newspaper around the planet.
It's sort of like, it needs to sink into, because you have the sense of, I knock on wood, it's real, it's hard, it's there, it seems like stuff. And
right.
We live in this world of stuff, we think, right?
Right, right.
And yet what quantum is seeing, well, I mean, I've read it a long time ago that there's actually, between every atom in my body is just this tremendous amount of space. And,
right.
But every atom in my body is actually just not even really an atom particle. It's like my whole body is just made up of these waves and probabilities that I would call now atoms. But the other thing about that was that there was this idea that it's the consciousness, in a way, sounds like it's a kind of an information or idea thing too. I mean, like you talk, he was talking about how a cup, you think it's filled with coffee, but it's actually a million little trillions of particles that are sort of flickering off and on.
Right.
And none of them are static. None of them are enduring in time.
Right.
They're like there and they're gone. And it's a whole new particle that flickers in again,
right,
that you call a coffee atom or whatever. And that really what's going on wasn't wasn't that this that there's coffee and that's what's important, but it's or that there's a cup. It's what's really going on is the shape of it or the idea of it is what was really the
right
core
right
of it.
What quantum, and that's another way,
which is like the information about
the information about. So that's another way of pointing out that the fundamental, so quantum physics was trying to find what is the building blocks, the fundamental building blocks of the physical world. And as they inquired into the microstructure, you know, with molecules and atoms and elementary particles, more and more they discovered that instead of there being anything, any stuff, there was just an idea. There was just mind. There was just consciousness. And that's very interesting because if you think about it, so here the properties of these elementary particles are a function of, in the moment, how do we observe them? The act, like I've been saying, the act of observing the subatomic particle is creative. It will actually, that's the moment where that infinite potentiality and, you know, will become actual into a particular specific form and have a particular property. But then quantum physics has discovered, oh, if you peel off each property one by one, what's the actual stuff that all the properties they're adhered to? There's nothing there. When you take off the last property, it's emptiness. There's nothing there. And remember, the properties are a function of our observing, of consciousness. And so what you're talking about with the coffee cup, quantum physics has discovered that each moment this universe is pulsating in and out of the void and recreating itself anew with a simulation of itself that looks exactly like it did the moment before, maybe with a slight difference. But we, because we don't have the perceptual, like the apparatus to perceive that,
catch it that fast.
We observe it as being solid and continuous. But quantum physics is saying, no. Each moment, it's a new universe, and you're part of that universe, and you're observing the universe is actually a major part of the equation of how that universe manifests.
And so that universe that I'm observing is also, there's a sense that I was getting, is observing me. And the other thing that you kept getting into, even though everything's flickering on and off, and there it's just not even, you know, these little independent entities that come and go, there's another sense where it's all one big whole interconnected whole, right?
Right,
and
if I can say
goes
something
with
about
these,
that.
Like mystical traditions and stuff.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's very, you know, when you study the articulation of the quantum physicists, I mean, the way they're articulating it, it maps on precisely to a lot of the mystics, to what they're saying. And so quantum physics, remember I was saying it's not seeing things. Things don't exist in quantum physics as separate. So there's no separation. So it's this holistic viewpoint. And one of the great discoveries in quantum physics is this: instead of this being like this universe where there's these causes and they're existing in like this sort of like right here and now and separate from, you know, in the future or separate from a million miles away, quantum physics is pointing out, no, this is like this non-local universe. That non-locality is being called the greatest scientific discovery of the century. And what that means is that this universe, it's in a seamless, interconnected whole with no separation, and it exists outside of space and time. So there are parts of the universe that are completely on opposite ends of the universe that instantaneously, in zero time, communicate with each other. And you know, so this world is non-local, that's been shown. And the idea that we live in a non-local universe is profound because it's pointing at the intrinsic wholeness and that we're actually all connected with the source of the universe and with each other. And it just obliterates that notion of separation between us and each other and the rest of the universe. And the implications of that are major because one of the implications is that, oh, compassion is the expression of when we recognize that. And that is just to recognize the true nature that we're actually not separate, that we don't, who we've been imagining we are. If we imagine we're a separate entity, a skin encapsulated ego, that's an illusion. And that's the classical physics point of view, that the universe exists out there. As soon as you observe the universe out there, then concurrently in, you know, at that moment, we've then dreamed ourselves up to be a separate self who's having a relationship to the objective universe out there. Then we've misidentified who we are. We've fallen asleep. And that's really the fundamental source of all of the horror that's playing out in the world. But I guess one implication of that is when you see through that this world, it does not exist objectively, then all of a sudden, what happened to the subject? You have nothing to be in relationship to. Once you see there's no objective world, all of a sudden, who you are becomes into question, and that's where quantum physics becomes a spiritual path, because it's actually shedding light on who we actually are.
Right. It's quite amazing. I mean, this book, I mean, it's hard to put it all in an hour. But anyway, I want to just let listeners know, I'm speaking with Paul Levy. He's a Portland healer, teacher, author of the recently published The Quantum Revelation, Radical Synthesis of Science and Spirituality. He does dream wakening in the dream groups here in Portland. He is going to be tomorrow at Thursday at 7:30 p.m. He'll be at Powell City of Books, downtown Portland, and talking more about this book. This is The Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. And if you'd like to call in with questions or comments, we can let that happen now. The phone number here is 503-231-8032. Thanks. And then I'd also like to get you, like, sort of... So we're talking about how we are here. We think we're real. And there's this whole notion that actually, no, we're all connected. But I think because we're so imbued with our basic philosophy of how things are and stuff, just hearing these ideas, I don't think it really like, you know, it's like it's still hard to get out of the mindset that, you know, I'm sitting here with you and you're observing me, I'm observing you, but I don't really feel like I'm you, you know, or...
Right.
And how do we start to really wrap our heads around these ideas?
Right. No, I appreciate that. And the thing about... So, like, I guess one thing I want to say with this book, because I'm not a physicist, and this, you know, so this book is not written. You don't have to have any physics background. There's no math. The only math is one equation. 3 + 1 = 4 is the one equation, and it's like an alchemical equation that I explained. But the point is that we experience, so this world we live in seems to be like this ordinary, this classical world, and yet the physicists are saying, oh, but all of us experience the quantum universe way, way more than the classical universe, that we are quantum entities. And I have a big chapter in the book on like the everyday, just everyday life and how quantum physics informs everyday life. And so it's not just something, you know, that, yeah, it's, you know, there are all these technologies that have developed, but it actually has this, you know, it's so important for just, you know, our everyday, day-to-day lives. An example being, like, when I was describing before that quantum entities exist in a potential state of this potentiality, and then when we observe them, the wave function collapses into the particular manifestation. Well, we are quantum entities. So when we meet someone, so they have infinite selves, like as do we all, and then, but we might know a particular aspect of our friend, so that's the version that we see and have relationship with and speak to, and then out of all the possibilities of who that and how that person would manifest, that particular aspect of them will be the one that shows up when we are in relationship to them, which then confirms to us, oh, that really is who they are, and they see us that same way. And that's happening all the time in relationships. And like, I'll just give you a specific example that happened for me. There was one point a number of years ago, I was in a relationship and we had broken up and we were still in the same house together. And I remember I was sleeping in the bed. It was the morning and my ex-girlfriend at this point, she was waking me up and she was going to ask me a question and she was afraid of the answer I was going to give. And so I was totally asleep and she woke up that part of me that was not going to give her the answer she wanted. And at that moment, I was awake to that. I was awake to, oh, she's evoking, it was the way she asked the question, it evoked the part of me that was going to say that was not going to give her the answer she wanted. And somehow I in that moment had the awareness to see that. But that's an example where if she would have maybe had asked the question in a different way and had evoked a different part of me that would have given her the answer she wanted, that would have been the part of me that would have manifested. Mm-hmm. So the point, and you know, like I said, I have a whole chapter in the book where I go into how it's not just this esoteric theory and you know, that you have to understand physics or math or science, because I don't. The idea that I've written a book on physics, I mean, it's crazy to me. I mean, I'm not a physicist. I don't know how to do physics. I don't know understand the equations or the math or anything. But what I understand is this, that all the quantum physicists are saying this is the most important scientific discovery in all of history. It's indisputable. Everyone is saying that. And even Einstein himself, and quantum physics was his demon. It completely freaked him out. He never was able to wrap his mind around what it was showing. Einstein himself said, quantum physics is so uncommonly important that it should be everyone's concern. And there are other physicists who say it's an incredible pity that the majority of people don't understand what it's revealing to us, because it has that much significance for all of us. And so just as a curious person, I would hear this, and not being a physicist, I would say, well, I wonder, and they're saying that this universe is quantum through and through, and we're quantum entities. And so I was just, as a curious person, just trying to understand, well, what's the big deal? Like, how come they're all saying this, and why are they so excited? And it's not just for the last year or two, for like 35 years, I've been going down this rabbit hole. And then I began to realize, oh my God, quantum physics actually, it describes when I had this spiritual awakening 38 years ago or something like that. And all of a sudden stuff began happening that wasn't supposed to be happening in this reality. And I couldn't wrap my mind around, how is this possible? Once I became acquainted with quantum physics, all of a sudden, it helped me to frame and contextualize and understand these out-of-the-ordinary experiences I was having. And one final thing, it's like quantum physics is like this psychedelic. And, you know, some friends of mine have counseled me, oh, don't say that, that's kind of edgy. But I can't think of another word that's more accurate. When you contemplate what quantum physics is showing us, it actually is like taking 100 hits of acid. And it just starts coming on, and it just keeps on deepening and deepening as you integrate what it's showing you. So, and I think for the Portland community, I think saying it's like okay, a psychedelic is okay.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was reading your book, my husband was reading Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind.
Right.
And the same thing, the people who are having the biggest breakthroughs psychologically were people who were having mystical experiences on psychedelics. I mean, like through a therapeutic setting and all that, but real super breakthroughs with anxiety, depression, and addiction. And we do have a caller. Cornelius, what would you like to say or ask?
Hi there. Well, what I was wanting to ask is, in Paul's opinion, do you see a
Are you still there? Cornelius, we seem to have lost you. I don't know what happened. Okay, try to call back, Cornelius. Hopefully we can get you what's going on.
That was very quantum. That was very dreamlike, you know?
Yeah, what was that? In fact, that's another part of this in terms of dealing with this in our own lives. Like, you're very into synchronicities, mm-hmm. symbols. Could you talk a little about some of that?
Yeah, totally. Part? And I actually have a lot of stuff in the book about synchronicities and the symbolic dimension, because quantum physics is a symbolic procedure. And just remember, like, what is a symbol? But first off, it's the language. When you have a dream, that's the language of dreaming. And so symbols, it's different than a sign, which is like, for example, one way do not enter is a sign. The meaning is like this literal meaning, and we can understand it with our mind. Symbols are emanations of something deeper, and they're actually this doorway that actually bring us to that deeper place. And so here's quantum physics. It's a, you know, it's a symbolic activity, and it's pointing at that this universe is symbolic in the sense that, like I said, symbols are the language of dreams, that it's basically pointing at the dreamlike nature, that everything is in a way like, you know, this reflection or an expression of the deeper reality. And if we actually have the recognition, so I guess one way of understanding what I'm saying is that this universe is an oracle that's always speaking to us, and speaking to us symbolically. And when we get in touch with that, when we sort of have the recognition of what's being shown to us and what and how the universe is a symbol. And a symbol is actually speaking to a deep part of ourselves. So when we actually have the recognition of, oh, the symbol means this, and it actually unlocks, it's an energy transducer or transformer of the psyche. And so when we actually tune into this symbolic dimension of reality, then all of a sudden, that's the doorway into the dreamlike nature. And that's where we actually discover, oh, the non-local field that we're all expressions of and connected via the non-local field, and we're contained within it. And all of a sudden, that brings in, you know, the whole idea of this being a dream and speaking in symbols is that it's helping us to wake up. And what is it helping us to wake up to? To who we are. And who are we? Where we don't exist as separate selves. And that's what I was saying before the break, that quantum physics, in a way, is a spiritual tradition, because, you know, with you know, say you go to do, you know, like this spiritual practice meditation, you look inside your own mind to really hopefully to unlock and discover who you are. Well, quantum physics, by inquiring into the actual outer world and the microstructure, what are the building blocks of matter of the outer world, has come to the exact same place that, you know, consciousness to who we are is actually interfacing with the non-local field, which dispels separation and engenders this incredible compassion and unlocks this incredible creativity, because it's showing us that moment by moment. A great way of understanding quantum physics in a nutshell is that it's pointing out that we actually are creating our moment by moment experience of ourselves and the world. And when you realize that, it gives you an enormous creative power, but it also comes with this responsibility. So we are creating our experience of the world and ourselves. There's no world out there. There's nothing objective. We're not passive, just observers. We're actually participating. We're observer participants in the evocation of the very universe. And the extent we're asleep, we then think the universe is objective. We then react to what we think of as objective. We become conditioned, and we've basically hypnotized ourselves. And that's the state of our species. Currently, we're suffering a collective psychosis. We've brainwashed ourselves, we've hypnotized ourselves. And quantum physics, when you really sort of understand what it's pointing at, it's showing us, no, that's mistaken view. We actually are participating in the creation of the universe moment by moment. And when enough of us have that realization, we can connect with each other and actually change the waking dream. And that's evolutionary. And that's what this is all about. And that's what quantum physics is really showing us.
I really want to get into that. Like, we've got maybe another quarter here to go, but we do have a caller. But let's get Cornelius back, because he was cut off.
Yeah, he was the first one, yeah.
Cornelius, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Don't lose us now.
Let's hope not.
Okay.
So what I was going to ask was, is there a connection or a conflict between, Paul, your perception of quantum physics and atheism, or a higher power? To me, quantum physics always kind of supersedes the singular higher power and kind of makes everything that collective higher power. What is your point of view with as far as that?
Yeah, no, and that I just really appreciate that question. And I have my point of view, which is also similar to a lot of the founding fathers and the quantum physicist point of view, and that is that quantum physics, it's actually, instead of like sort of, you know, proving that God doesn't exist, it's proving, or it's really seemingly pointing at, that there is this incredibly higher dimensional intelligence. And instead of it being out there separate from us, it pervades everything, including ourselves, including our own mind. And so I have a chapter in the book about exactly this question. And I point, and, you know, and I'll quote Einstein and different physicists who are saying, yeah, basically physics is actually, you know, as much as one can say this, is confirming this deeper sense that there's some sort of higher power.
Okay.
Okay. That's cool.
Great. Cornelius, we're going to move on now to Mike. Had a question?
Oh, good morning.
Hi. Mike, what would you like to say?
Thanks for the show. Thanks for the show and just trying to get people together and open minds. It's all good. The other thing is I'd like to do more and be more active, but I'm busy working because got to keep some of that material world going. But I tell you, I do better in that effort if I forget about that material world. So that's my suggestion for everybody. But my question for the guest is, let me give you a setup here. And when I go into a deli or something like that and I want to ask for a tuna fish sandwich, I don't want to have to get into the get the electron microscope out and fact check all their ingredients and stuff. I just want to ask for a tuna fish sandwich, and I want to trust that that person's making a tuna fish sandwich. You know what I mean? How do we go through our day and not get caught up in worrying and then giving up because it's just too complicated? How do we simplify this stuff on a day-to-day sandwich?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I can answer that by talking about so I do like Tibetan Buddhist practice where they'll talk about there's different levels of reality. There's the absolute level and then the relative level, and the two actually are not separate. They interpenetrate. And you know, a big mistake I see people making is they'll get acquainted with the absolute point of view that it's all one. There's no separation. It's all a dream. And they'll forget about, they'll just, you know, ignore the relative point of view, and that's a big mistake. You know, if you really are awake, you have to honor both the relative and the absolute. And what that means is, yeah, you can see, you know, this is a dream, and you can really appreciate the quantum nature of reality. And you're also, you know, you have another foot in the classical world of relative reality where you go into a deli and order a tuna fish sandwich. And that's not separate from the absolute. The two, like I was saying, interpenetrate. So there's not a problem at all. The point is to get those two in balance and to not just kind of overly identify. Like some people overly identify with the relative and they just think the absolute is garbage or crazy or nonsense. And they're one-sided in that way compared to people who hear the absolute point of view and just immediately identify. And I know people like that who identify with that and then they don't balance their checkbook or whatever, and they get themselves in trouble in actual day-to-day life. So the point is to have that balance between the two.
I need to do a little break here again. We're speaking with Paul Levy, Portland teacher, author, healer, and he's talking about his book, which is just recently published, The Quantum Revelation, A Radical Synthesis of Science and Spirituality. And it seems that if we could let it in, quantum theory could provide, as we've said in the beginning, a new paradigm for humanity. It's about letting it in. Tomorrow, Thursday, at 7:30 p.m., he'll be at Powell's City of Books, 1005 Northwest Burnside in downtown Portland to talk about this book. And you're tuned to The Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. Again, if you'd like to call in with questions, the number is 503-231-8032. And God, there's so many things here. One of them, like just real quickly, I want to talk about like what you were saying about, you know, how do we deal with this as a collective energy and are we creating a mass psychosis? But one, right. Two little last things before we do that. One is back to the whole, you know, the Buddhist idea, the more spiritual idea about how ego is a part of all this. And like, you know, we can project. I had a little example once where I was like sort of seeing this woman as like very arrogant, say, and yet I sort of, and she was just constantly popping into my space in all these different ways. And then I realized that I tended to go around thinking of myself as kind of a mush mouse person. Mm-hmm. And I decided that maybe in a certain projection sort of way, she was like, I wasn't owning my own dignity or something, you right. know? And then so that my dignity then was sort of manifesting as this sort of ugly shadow arrogance energy.
Right.
But then she, when I really got that, it's like this woman disappeared. She wasn't in my life anymore at all. She just vanished, you know. So there is this weird, I got a sense of magic from that, you know.
Yeah.
And I've had other experiences. But it also seems that we have these deep entrenched habits of behavior, our habits of reaction, and that they tend to bum us out. You know, we want we want this. I have to have it, or I like and I want, or else I don't like. I want to get away from. We find ourselves contracting. How does all that fit in with this as a way of getting through? I mean, or working with stuff like that to become more expansive and uncontracted and connected.
Well, first let me talk a little bit about the first part of your question with that woman who, from my point of view, she's a character in your dream. She's this dream character, just like you have a dream at night and you have people in the dream and you wake up and, they're all embodied aspects of yourself. And they're like actually, you know, you've dreamed them up into the dream. So they're, actually these like reflections of parts of yourself that will continue to show up in your dream until you actually have the recognition of, I'm looking in a mirror. That's that part of myself. That's when you begin to own that projection. And as you integrate that, then there's no need for them to show up anymore because you've integrated that part of yourself that was split off. You've integrated it into your wholeness. And so the point is that that's where you're beginning to recognize this is a dream. That's what I mean about the dreamlike nature of reality. And the second part of your question, there's a collective psychosis going on and we're all like reinforcing. We've all been conditioned just by being in this culture. We've all been taught who we are, you know, in this limited way, which is not who we actually are, and that certain things are possible and certain things are not possible, and that it's even okay to think a certain way and not think another way. So we've all been sort of like under this program. We've been programmed or brainwashed or hypnotized or conditioned via just being in this world and in this society we live in. And so the point is when you begin to see that, one of the things that's really helpful, and this will get, I think, to the other thing you were kind of asking, is that you discover you can hang out and connect with other people who are also having the realization, you know, you can say it a number of ways, that we're dreaming or, you know, that we've been programmed and, you know, that have the recognition with each other, we're all dream characters in each other's dreams, which means we're not separate, which means if I help you, I get as much benefit as you do. And when you actually connect with other people, and in Tibetan Buddhism, they'll talk about this is the community, this is the Sangha, one of the three jewels that are the foundation for enlightenment. And people think this might even be the most important of the ones, the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, the teacher, teaching, and the community. When you connect with community, you know, we have a tribe, finding our tribe, and all of a sudden you discover you can activate the collective genius in the field where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, where, in my phrase, we can actually dream ourselves awake. And that's amazing. That's in other words, I guess one way to understand this is that if you're in a dream and you have the recognition that you're dreaming, okay, that's great. But then there are all the other dream characters in the dream. Well, imagine just through our imagination, just imagine that if another dream character in that dream, they also wake up to the dreamlike nature. And now there's two of you, and imagine then there's 10, then there's 100. And imagine you all connect with each other and you contemplate, what are you realizing? Oh my God, we're realizing that this universe we're in, it's actually a function of our consciousness, that we're co-dreaming this universe. They can discover, I imagine, that they can put what I call the sacred power of dreaming, which is the part of us that's dreaming the dream, into materialization, that they could connect with each other and access that sacred power of dreaming in a way that they can change the dream. And that's, and I'm talking about a night dream, but that's exactly our situation in the waking dream that we're all sharing right now. And that's what this is all about. That's in essence what my book is about. And that's evolution, and we're participating in our own evolution. And so that would be
right.
My answer.
And I guess part of it is you get in this, oh my God, you know, climate change is bearing down, pollution in the oceans, you know, potentials for war all over the place. Do we have enough time? But there's a sense reading your book that even time is just another.
Right. Well, quantum physics, it's a timeless theory. There's no factor for time in that it's really talking about the present moment, and the present moment is always right now. So it's the same present moment. And, and it's so trippy, quantum physics, because they've done experiments where even the way we observe the past right now it seems to have an influence on, or at the very least, I guess the way I want to say it, it changes what we can say about the past. And that, so quantum physics is pointing out that the past and the future are enfolded into the present moment. So we typically think that the past causes the present moment, but quantum physics is saying, but the future might also be causing the present moment too. And the handshake between the past and the future is in the present moment, and that's the now moment, and that's the only moment that exists. And that's when you see, when you begin to see with the synchronistic phenomena, where think about what a synchronicity is. It's where some inner state in us is getting expressed via the outer world. So the boundary between the inner and the outer is actually dissolving. And if you really unfold, well, what is that showing us? Well, that's showing us the dreamlike nature, and not just the dreamlike nature of the outside world, but I'm part of the dream. It's showing me my nature, because the quantum nature, that's the Buddha nature. In my book, I really point out there's an equivalence. What the Buddha discovered, 2,500, a long time ago, over two centuries ago, that's exactly what quantum physicists have discovered through the medium of science. It's the same realization. And all that I'm trying to point out is, like, so this discovery has been made for a century now, but I'm just trying to point out how we can view it and what meaning we can get from it that's going to actually help our evolution. Because the typical physicist, that's not what they learn in graduate school. That's not what they've signed on for. So in a way, it makes sense that an outsider like me, who's not a physicist, who's very into, this being a dream, is pointing out, look, when you look at quantum physics in this way, it actually is helping us to actually wake up to our nature.
Yeah. And the fact is, quantum physics, it works. I mean, that's what, I guess, why it's so, I mean, it,
yeah, yeah.
The technology.
Well, it's the most successful theory ever in all of history. It's never been proven to be wrong in one iota. There's never been anything like it.
Right. So it's a very valid system for understanding what's going on. And then you throw in this complete magical aspect of it, and it's quite...
Right. Well, and I've got to say one word about that. The quantum for the founding fathers are basically saying, they use the word, there's something magic going on here. And they keep on using that word. And, so I just wanted to highlight that quantum physics, it's actually, it's connecting with what I was saying before, that it's like a psychedelic. It's actually an expression of, so like one way of understanding the magic, quantum physics is pointing at the dreamlike nature, but it's simultaneously an expression of the very dreamlike nature it's pointing at.
Right.
And there's real magic when you discover, because something becomes unlocked in our psyche. All the founding fathers were saying the big significant change in quantum physics is going to be in our thinking. It's not going to be, even though we've changed the entire world with computers and so many technologies, like I was saying, that's just like 0.001% of what actually is available to us. And what my book is about is just inquiring into, as a curious person, what is this showing us? This is like unbelievable.
And as you said too, allowing our imaginations then to sort of, maybe as a collective, I guess one of the things I came away, it doesn't have to be this way. This sort of depressed, it's like this, it's just because of all these things that happened and what, but there's a sense of it doesn't have to be this way. And you really emphasize the importance of imagination and as a collective, just having a different vision and imagination of what's possible. It's sort of like,
right.
Some sign on my mother's high school was, without vision, the people perish.
Perish, yeah, that's a famous, I think that's from the Bible. No, totally, and that's, I have a chapter on imagination, on the profound importance of the creative imagination. And, one of the things that quantum physics really, it opens up the imagination, because what we've conceived of as being possible, quantum physics really, opens that up for questions and saying, don't limit yourself. What you thought of as possible, as like not possible, is way more expansive than we've previously imagined, to the point where it's pushing the boundary between, I don't know if anything's possible, but a lot more is possible than we've been entrained and conditioned to imagine.
Right. So imagine just momentarily a world run on a quantum physics sensibility.
Right.
What would this be? Like, instead of competition, maybe cooperation? I mean, what kinds of things?
Yeah, exactly. That's a beautiful way of saying it. Instead of competition, there'd be cooperation, and there would be enormous creativity, and we would all be like, helping each other in the sense of... you know, like I imagine if we're all having this awareness of that we're dreaming and that we're interconnected, and having that compassion that pervades that understanding, it would just unlock this incredible creative force that we become the instruments for, and we discover, oh my God, we have it in our power to change the world and to create the dream we want to live in.
Okay, so just what's your website real quick, and then we're going to...
The website, awakeninthedream.com. And, you know, there's a ton of this articles for free and stuff like that.
Okay, So you've been hearing from teacher, healer, and author Paul Levy, founder of Awaken in the Dream Groups here in Portland, who's just written The Quantum Revelation, A Radical Synthesis of Science and Spirituality. He'll be speaking at Powell City of Books in downtown Portland tomorrow at 7:30. And this has been The Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter. Thanks to Tammy Dean for her fine engineering. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 31st Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 4th through July 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. Performing artists this year include Beth, Robert Randolph and the Family Band, Ruthie Foster, and the Mavericks, as well as annual traditions like the Bill Rhodes Harmonica Blow-Off, Zydeco Dance Lessons, Blue Cruises, After Parties, and much more. Again, that's the 31st Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 4th through July 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm Rick Mitchell, and I would like to invite you to check out my program, Jazz in the New Millennium, at kboo.fm. Each one-hour program focuses on a living jazz artist.